Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Maysoon and I are in different places and at different times this week. It's summer, you know, things are just topsy-turvy.
Hey, Kate. So I wanted to make a quick announcement for our listeners. A couple weeks ago, I believe I announced that the Arts Commission Gallery is hosting this incredible event celebrating 47 years of programming at our Grove Street location, celebrating the final window installation by Martin Vanesky, and then followed with a procession organized by, you know, our favorite Cliff Hengst. It was initially planned for this Saturday. Because of all the political sort of actions taking place throughout all of San Francisco and in particular Civic Center, we felt it was best to postpone the event. And so it's now rescheduled or been rescheduled for Saturday, September 30th, same time, 6 to 8. You know, of course, there's no telling what's going to happen on that day either, but just felt like the response, especially from the Arts Commission, a city, you know, municipal gallery and department, just felt like we really needed to be just sort of acknowledging what's taking place in the city and sort of supporting people out being out in the street and protesting and stuff.
There is a second floor project's pop-up happening at the Luggage Store Annex, which is at 509 Ellis Street. That's right by Jessica Silverman Gallery. And it is opening Friday, September 8th from 6 to 9 p.m. with Frank Haynes, Jerry the Marble Faun, and Astria Superrock. There's also going to be an opening at Jessica Silverman of Judy Chicago and RSF with Marcella Pardo Ariza. Please go. It's also right by the Chairman. You know, they have a food truck, but they also have a brick and mortar place, and I really like their food. Okay, this week we've got some interviews that I did with research assistant Katie Kondo for the KCRW 24-hour radio race. And since the piece that you make for the radio race is only 4 minutes, and we have all these incredible interviews with people at the stud because it's converted into a co-op now, the first cooperatively owned nightclub in America. So we wanted to do a little special episode with all that stuff. So have a listen. We're out here at the stud talking to John Cartwright.
And I'm one of the co-owners of the cooperatively run stud bar in San Francisco.
Can you just tell us about the stud?
Generally, the stud is it's a 51 now, I guess, year old gay bar that has been in South of Market since 1966 is when it opened. It was originally on Folsom Street, where currently the Holy Cow is, with that weird hanging cow outside. And it was there until I'm not gonna get this totally right, but I believe it was like in the early to mid 80s it moved to this location. Has been through a few different like groups of owners over the past few years, or not past few years, but over its lifespan, as it's kind of old. It was one of the first gay bars in San Francisco that was sort of like open to having women at it and having people of whatever gender at, and it was also sort of constantly known for kind of pushing musical boundaries as well. Like, it was one of the first places that was sort of playing punk rock and one of the first places that was sort of playing new wave and stuff like that. And then further into the musical legacy, playing some really, having like really not famous, but like locally famous sort of house music nights and stuff like that when that was sort of starting. So it's a place that's constantly sort of been like maybe ahead of a little curve in, you know, the sort of underground sort of way. What else? And then it's also known a lot for the drag performance and stuff that goes on here. So about a year ago, I guess at this point, it happened sort of after Pride of last year, after the anniversary party. The owner, Michael, he held a sort of town hall meeting here and put it up on Facebook and invited people to come out and sort of said, if you care about the future of the stud, please come. So everybody showed up. There was probably like 30 people here. And he sort of sat on stage and woefully announced that, well, sort of a little bit of woe and a little bit of relief in his voice too, announced that he had been sort of in the process of clearing the bar of all of its debts and trying to get it to a position where he could sell it to another person or whatever. He wanted to sort of pass it off to the next generation to keep it going. And it had some financial trouble in the past, so he was just getting everything current and was like kind of there and was about ready to do that when he found out that the building had been sold. Such a typical San Francisco story. The previous landlord passed away. Nobody knew about it. And then it went on the market and immediately was sold, like, super, super, super quickly. And so the new landlords came with the new lease. And the lease was, you know, it's something. It wasn't actually quite three times the rent that he had been paying. So the new people, the new landlords, they were increasing the rent. They weren't really giving much of an option for a lease extension. And it seemed like they just kind of didn't want the bar to be here anymore. So he was kind of announcing at this thing that he was going to say that the bar was for sale if somebody was interested in it, but he kind of had a time limit, which related to some personal family matters, and he also wanted to move back to Hawaii to be closer to his family. Four of us or so were at that meeting. More than that, we're at the meeting, but a group of four of us kind of got together afterwards and started having this conversation to initiate this sort of idea of, like, what could we do? How could we buy a bar? Like, this bar is so important to the community and so important to us. And so the idea of the co-op was put forward. A bar is an expensive thing to buy, but in a group, if you add a bunch of people to it, and that number gets lower and lower and lower and lower. So we worked on gathering just kind of a list of people that would be good to work together, I guess is sort of the thing, and who kind of represented a good chunk of community. Not all those people wound up becoming members of the co-op, but I think that the group that we wound up coming up with is really, really great and really cool. You know, we got together, we did all the stuff, we've, like, gone through the purchase. There's still a little bit of, like, lingering, like, legal stuff in the air, just having to do with ABC and whatever, the liquor license stuff, but we're basically done, and now we own the bar, and there's 18 owners, and it's kind of cool and amazing, and it's really been exciting to see what we've been able to do. You know, Michael admittedly was tired. He'd been running the bar alone for many years. His previous partner passed away. That's why he was excited to try to sell it to other people, because he wanted to breathe some fresh air into it and believes in the legacy of the business. So it's really exciting seeing us sort of doing that, using this space as a way to continue, like, the legacy of the bar, but also the community that it really feels like is sort of just, like, emptying out of San Francisco. And so being able to have that space really kind of solidify is really exciting for us.
My name is Logan Jonas, and I'm one of the members of the collective that own the bar.
And so this was the first gay bar you were ever at in San Francisco?
Yes, I actually came here because a friend of mine wanted me to do a drag show with him. So I came here to see what I was getting myself into.
And did you do it?
I did. I actually had the fortune of being able to perform with Peaches Christ.
Ooh!
What did it feel like performing for the first time on stage here?
Ooh, I felt really nervous, so I got really drunk first, and all the drag queens were really, really nice to me. So, like, they were like, "Oh, you messed up on this. You messed up." Like, and they, like, fixed me, you know, like, fix my makeup, fix my hair, like, so. They really helped me out, and the drag community here is really awesome because they act like family. So, it was a great experience.
Do you have a certain way that you describe the decor of the bar to other people, like maybe people who haven't been here before?
Oh, I don't know. I always, like, say it's, like, my favorite hole in the wall type of bar, where it's sort of dark and weird and everybody's welcome and it's just sort of funky, you know?
I especially like the two porcelain-looking ram's heads behind the bar.
Yeah, that came from the person that owned the bar before us. So a lot of the stuff, like, they have, like, the old tracks from, like, the train set that used to be at the original location where Holy Cow is now. So there's, like, stuff that's just collected of memorabilia from the bar's 51 years. So it's kind of cool.
John kept giving the example of, like, the hard decisions to make. One was what sort of cocktail cherries should be bought for the bar.
But now I'm curious about everyone's cherry preferences.
I didn't even know there was another kind besides maraschino cherries.
You know, I at a different bar that I worked at when I was 21 and 22, we were not the most responsible 21 and 22-year-olds. So we kind of partied after hours, which you're not supposed to, and we knocked over a whole jar and didn't realize it, like one of those huge Costco jars. And luckily enough, we were the opening bar staff the next day, and we came in, and we had forgot to plug all the taps. I mean, it was just like a mess with ants, but the huge, like, half-inch thick trail of ants literally walked around Marciano cherries to get to the beer. And I was like, if the ants aren't going for it, why am I eating it?
You got any other weird things that have happened here? Ghosts?
No ghosts.
Love?
Do I have love?
Have you ever had a love experience?
I met my boyfriend here.
I love that.
Yeah, so...
What, did your eyes lock from across the room over a tender or invigorating song?
Oh, my God. I think if I share the story, it might kill me. So my Scruff app said he was, like, 52 feet away, and he happened to be in the bar, and we talked, and now we date.
You met someone in the same bar you were in through a dating app.
Yeah, we'll call it a dating app, yes.
I love that. Could you say your name?
Yeah, my name's Kevmo.
Awesome.
Yeah, since the bar changed ownership in the past year, this club has changed quite a bit, and I like what it's turned into. It's become a lot more inclusive. I think everyone's welcome here, and everyone's encouraged to come. It used to be like only gay men were here, and now it's super mixed, and I think it's a cool vibe.
Yay! Do you have any interesting things that have happened here? Have you ever seen a ghost or fallen in love or any other types of apparitions or paranormal activities?
No paranormal activity. I went into the basement and I thought I was going to see a ghost in there, but there were no ghosts. I broke a heart here. I've had my heart broken here. It's a part of my story. It's going to be in my memoir.
How would you describe the bar for someone who has never been here before?
Yeah, especially the decor.
It's a very eclectic. There was a pheasant here for a while.
Like a taxidermied pheasant?
Oh, yeah.
Like the full stuffed pheasant.
Yes, in all of its regalia. It was a white pheasant, plumaged for days.
Would you mind saying your name and, like, your relationship to the stud?
My drag name is Voodonna Black. My boy name is Julian. This was the first place that I ever performed at, like, 2 years ago.
Amazing. And you've been performing ever since?
Yeah. I performed here a lot of times on Fridays for something that party is no longer a thing, but I do come and do different parties once in a while at the stud.
Awesome. Have you ever had a strange or interesting or bizarre story that happened here? Anything love related or?
Oh, I'm the one that this person met on the app. So just a little Latin boy looking for love in all the wrong places. Yeah, but that's pretty much like, yeah. I mean, there's always bizarre people, bizarre things happening here. Everybody from all walks of life, like even drag queens. Like I've seen drag queens from like range from super, super young to super, super mature and have been doing it for, you know, a year or like 15 years.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen happen here?
Fatima Rude, who is an iconic drag queen performer in San Francisco. She did a number with porcelain where porcelain drilled a hole through her cheek, through Fatima's cheek, put two hooks through the holes, wrapped it up behind her, and made her permanently smile throughout a orchestra number, bloodied. I remember Fatima was in the back. We almost had to call the hospital because her blood was not coming. It was not stopping. So I was in the back. I was like, oh, I'm next. I'm ready to perform right after this. And like my beautiful beaded gown. And I'm like, are you okay, Fatima? But
was it a hard act to follow?
I mean, it's always a hard act to follow Fatima, but she's such a sweetheart, and she's one of the most beloved drag queens in San Francisco.
Can you describe your outfit?
Passive-aggressive, rockabilly chick who wants to be loved but pushes her lover away, gets dumped after telling him to go, goes into the stall, cries, comes back and says, please take me again. And then, you know, we go to a diner, sip our shakes, and you know, we have hardcore anal sex. A rockabilly chola chick. It's my thing.
I love that.
Don't talk to me, but please talk to me. Don't touch me there, but please touch me there. pretty much my whole drag aesthetic. It's like, I'm very intimidating, don't talk to me, but I'm very lonely, please talk to me.
I wish I was intimidating. I'm not at all.
Glue down your eyebrows and make them like up here, and you're fine. You're good.
Do you remember the first time you ever went to a queer bar?
I think the first queer bar that I actually started to hang out might have been actually the stud. I think Fatima was the first drag queen I ever saw or talked to, and she was like half naked, paint dripping down her body, like these really cool Jewish lady, old lady glasses, and she's like, "You're beautiful." I'm like, "I don't know who you are, but thank you." But like, this is my introduction to even drag. I didn't know what drag was until I moved to San Francisco. So I mean, basically, my introduction to queer life was me stepping in San Francisco and like exploring it by myself. I mean, like every district has some queer history. I mean, it's, you know, no matter how many people get kicked out of San Francisco because of the high rates of like, you know, rent and everything, it would always be a gay queer city. It's never gonna not be.
So you described this bar as like a safe place, and I'm wondering what that means to you.
Well, me personally, I'm like, it's a place where I can dress up, do whatever I want, look whatever way I want. People look at me and they're like, "Cute outfit. How was your day?" Like, the outfit is not necessarily the focal point. Like, you're not outrageous. Like, you know, all my friends or anything, we can be in the most outrageous looks, but we're like, "Oh, I love what you did with the eye today." But and then they go on with our lives. Like, this is not a rarity. This is so normal for us. Things that you would normally see as grotesque or odd, make it normalized and have it be just another part of your day. That's what a safe space is.
Could you say your name and your relationship to the stud?
Yeah, my name is Micah Sigourney, or Vivian Forevermore, and I am one of the co-owners of the Stud Cooperative.
You have a night, Vivi.
Yeah, I do. I have a night. It's the second Friday of every month. It's called Vivi's Grand Opening. And before we purchased the stud, I was part of the weekly drag show here called Club Something that was running for 8 years for every week.
What makes this place special to you?
The stud feels as if it has history when you're inside of it. And that's not just the walls. It's also what people bring to it. There's a strong sense of like place, but also people in place. You can call it community if you want to, or a scene, or just like a strong network. And it's had that ethos for a really long time. During the AIDS crisis, it stayed open. Harvey Milk was said to have been here. So the stud has been known as a place where you could get, not just start party and celebrate, but also gather. It's one of the few, I would say, gay bars left that's just also available to gather at. Well, for me in particular, I started doing drag when my weekly party here started. So I, as a drag queen, I'm a professional drag queen now, like meaning I do it a lot and do it all the time. It's one of my career trajectories. If it wasn't for the stage here, this is the stage where my character was born and where I grew up as a performer and a entertainer. So it's where I've treaded the boards, and it's what I've called home and where I've practiced my craft or my technique. We used to have a party called Tiara Sensation, which was on Mondays. And we had a theme called 9/11 in July, which came and went. And this building behind you right now used to be a parking lot for buses. And we had a theme called That's Not Drag. And for one performance, a friend of ours rented a car and hooked up like some straps to the top of it and rode around on the top of a car with the doors open, playing the music on the car. So the audience had to like run after the car listening to the music while he lip-synced on top. And he did another version, a similar thing, but not the same, to Aaliyah's Back and Forth. Wait, is that right, the name of the song? Rock the Boat. Rock the Boat. Where he tried to parallel park a car in a spot that was too small, because it's like, rock the boat, work the middle, work the middle, work the middle. So like, some of the best performances I've seen have been here. Someone else set up a little station and did that song Crossroads by Boyz II Men, and then did a pantomime of selling clothes at Crossroads. So like, on Mondays at Tiara Sensation, which gave birth to Club Something, it was really like all just in it for the passion and the weirdos and the weirdness. It was a Monday night and it was free to get in, so it was like really industry nightlife people who just needed to do something and make a scene. I had a friend who had like a child's toy that was like an animatronic pony that was about 4 feet tall, that it was like light sensitive, so she got on stage and lip synced with it, and when the lights changed, the pony would walk around and stuff. So there was a lot of like weird ass shit.
We're also trying to figure out a way to describe the decor inside to someone who hasn't been there.
The decor, well, before we purchased, it was a little different. I would say it was a collage of kitsch that paid no mind, or nor did it indicate an aesthetic scale or value. We had like a weird kitchen lamp hanging in one spot. It was just like, whenever the previous owner saw something he liked, he just put it in. So it wasn't that kind of like organized kitchen, like say a TGI Fridays. You know, we're like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I get it. This is kitsch. It was more like, what is this? There was this weird, like, sculpture. No, there was a weird alien mask for months in one of the bathrooms that we never saw till one day one of our owners was like, screamed from the bathroom and, like, pulled down this alien mask. It was just, like, stuff everywhere. But then when we moved in, we just, like, kind of pared it back. But there's this persistent, like, semi-country western, like, indication around, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, the typeface.
It seems like maybe it's referencing a barn or something. And when it first opened, it definitely was in that vein. But yeah, it used to have like hay bales on the ground and everything. And now it's like, it's not a country, it was never a country western bar. It just had country western decor. But in the past, it's just become the weird mishmash of just like super dive plus strange garbage pinned on the wall. Like there's two porcelain ram heads.
Yes.
Behind the bar. There's like a weird sign that says tip your bartender. There was a mannequin in there for a while when we first moved in, and eventually we just like ran out with her into the street and we're just like, no more! And threw her.
Taking the plunge to join a co-op seems like a pretty big change in your life. I'd love to hear a little bit about that, and also maybe like what you felt was at stake if you didn't do that.
Personally, I mean, that's a really personal question in that, you know, I'm throwing a weekly party here. I have like an other career. I make performance and art, and I like have these pursuits. And when we were at the meeting where it was announced the stud is going away or going to be sold, I just, my brain went to, guess I'm moving to LA. That's it. Like my anchor and my home is gone. And then within the 4 hours it took for a few of us to decide on the co-op idea, I was like, I guess I'm staying. And like that feeling or thought that my anchor was gone became really like prescient. And I was like, oh, the stud has been my creative and physical social anchor for years. So like this, what was at stake was that disappearing for myself. And not just what the stud has been to me, but the potential for it to be something in that realm to other people. Do you know what I mean? Like we all, the people who were at the meeting about what was going on at the stud, like we're varied and all spend different times of the week here and have different experiences. So it's a home for like this wild and weird disparate group of people who might not ever be in the building at the same time, but it's all home for them. And so it was just, with the way the world is changing, the way San Francisco is changing, it also felt like so important to, if there's anything we can do to like throw down an anchor and then also be an example of how to do that when you don't have access to a lot of funds, but you do have access to a lot of people. And I was on the committee or group that out of our co-op who filed for legacy business status. Do you know about? So done a lot of research, and I might have the facts a little skewed, but the story is, the truth is, the stud was once like only a certain width, and next to it was a hippie church. The hippie church closed, and the stud inherited a piece of pane glass that we still have in the bar. I know, I don't know if it's hung up. I haven't noticed if it's hung up, but for a while we had it in stored, but that was from the original location and also this church next to it that closed that like then like rolls into the idea of what's painted above our front door, which is everyone is welcome. So like that's ethos from this hippie church like carried over somehow cosmically into the stud and when the stud took over their space. And I just think that that is such a nice, a little microcosm of San Francisco in that it's like this queer as fuck bar in Soma at the time, which was super masculine dominated, was like a mixed bar that then took over a space from like a straight hippie Jesus church. And like, and like maybe it like got some magic rubbed on it where like everyone's welcome. And that's just like good to me, you know?
Do you have any, one other thing, do you have any advice for people that are about to start doing drag?
Like, this is gonna sound so dumb, but just like, do you like dig in deep to what you think you are or what you're interested in and like follow that as long as it makes you happy. And when it might change, then follow that too, because drag is like such a like magically ridiculous, financially failure based art form. Like you're never gonna get paid for what you do unless you, RuPaul's Drag Race, but unless like you're never gonna get compensated in a real great way. It's a performance art, it's ephemeral, and you just have to do the thing that makes you so happy, and like whatever that is, just let that be the thing to guide you, and at least you'll have a good time. You know what I mean? Like maybe you'll never be great, but at least you'll make something that you want to make, and someone will definitely let you perform it somewhere.
Oh, that's great advice for artists in general.
I've been doing drag for 8 years, and there were times when I wasn't doing what I wanted, and I was like making myself bummed out with it, and I was like, why am I I'm not getting paid $100,000 to do this thing that I'm doing in a way that makes me unhappy. I'm getting paid $30. So I might as well just do it as weird as I want, as wrong as I want, as right as I want.
Right on. Thank you so much for talking to us tonight.